the word peace is shanti. You probably may have, many of you may have heard this chant, Om Shanti, Om Shanti, Om Shanti, Om. And it is indeed a prayer for peace. And Krishna uses that word in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and he talks in several places about how one can attain peace. But he begins, and it's interesting, because after all, the Bhagavad Gita is spoken on a battlefield. So it's almost like a paradox how he speaks about peace, but he's speaking to Arjuna in the battlefield. So I'm going to chant one verse, and before I do, I'll just offer one prayer to my spiritual master. Om Jnanatamarambasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chukshur Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of the Sri Parampara of the Disciplined Succession. So at the end of this chapter, chapter 2 is called the contents of the Gita summarized. So he covers the topics of Bhagavad Gita in summary. And then at the end, right near the end of the chapter, this is a long chapter, it's 72 verses, he has a verse here that talks about peace. So I'm going to read this verse, and then we'll discuss and the purport, and we can discuss how it pertains to us. So he says here, Vihaya kama niksarvan pumangs tadati nikspraha Nirmamo nadahankara sashantim adigachati. A person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, and who has given up all sense of proprietorship and is devoid of false ego, that person alone can attain real peace. And Prabhupada says in the purport, to become desireless means not to desire anything for sense gratification. In other words, desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actually desirelessness. To understand one's actual position as the eternal servitor of Krishna without falsely claiming this material body to be oneself and without falsely claiming proprietorship over anything in the world is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. One who is situated in this perfect stage knows that because Krishna is the proprietor of everything, everything must be used for the satisfaction of Krishna. Arjuna did not want to fight for his own sense gratification. But when he became fully Krishna conscious, he fought because Krishna wanted him to fight. For himself, there was no desire to fight. But for Krishna, the same Arjuna fought to his best ability. Real desirelessness is desire for the satisfaction of Krishna, not an artificial attempt to abolish desires. The living entity cannot be desireless or senseless, but he does have to change the quality of his desires. A materially desireless person certainly knows that everything belongs to Krishna, Isha Vashamitam Sarvam, and therefore he does not falsely claim proprietorship over anything. This transcendental knowledge is based on self-realization, namely knowing perfectly well that every living entity is an eternal part and parcel of Krishna in spiritual identity, and that the eternal position of the living entity is therefore never on the level of Krishna or greater than him. This understanding of Krishna consciousness is the basic principle of real peace. So this verse is kind of a summary of previous verses. And Arjuna questioned Krishna. Krishna was describing the soul who is fixed in consciousness, a real yogi. The basic principle of yoga is to control the senses and fix the consciousness on the Supreme. So this requires practice. And Arjuna wanted to know, what is the quality of one who has reached this stage? It was called Pragya Pratishtha. Pragya Pratishtha. Pragya means intelligence or consciousness. And what are the symptoms of one who does that? How can I know one? And so Krishna answered him in this chapter. He says, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partaman ogatan atmaneva manatushta stita pragyasta rochite. So this is the beginning of a series of verses in which he's describing the person whose consciousness is fixed. And this will come back to our subject matter of peace in a minute. So he says there, just as Krishna says here at the end of the chapter, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partaman ogatan. So this concept of kama, of material desire. Krishna describes in the third chapter, next chapter, that this is the real enemy of the spirit soul. Why is that? because it keeps us bound to this lower plane of birth and death. What agitates the mind? What is it that causes us to be unpeaceful in ourself? It is the fact that we as spirit souls are in an incompatible situation. We don't belong in the world of matter. By nature, we are full of bliss, full of knowledge, and eternal. But now in this material situation, identifying ourselves with our material bodies, the bodies are anything but full of bliss, full of knowledge, and eternal. They're full of all kinds of miseries. Maybe you can get to a situation where you're okay for a while, but we know that there's so many dangers in this world, so many diseases threatening us, ultimately old age is there. We certainly are not full of knowledge. There's so many things we don't know. We don't know ourself. We don't know who is God. We don't know what this world is. We're oceans of ignorance. And we're certainly temporary in this body. But the soul itself is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. So it is this dichotomy between the eternal soul and the temporary body, the full of bliss soul and the full of misery material body, that causes us to be dissatisfied, full of anxiety in this world. Thank you for coming. Hare Krishna. Welcome. So there's a great devotee named Prahlad Maharaj who has said this very succinctly. Prahlad was a little child, but he was a great devotee. And so many of you know the story, how he challenged his great father, the original demon in the universe. Big, powerful demon who had conquered the whole universe. And he had this little son, Prahlad, 5-year-old boy. But Prahlad had been instructed by Narada, and he was self-realized even in the womb. He came out and he was totally Krishna conscious and completely peaceful. He felt totally protected by Krishna. So he says to his father wanted to know, what's the best thing you learned today? He wanted to train him up to be the next generation of demon. So Prahlad says, my dear father, tat sadu mamne asudavar hidey hinam sadasa budhvinna diyama sadgrahat. Says, my dear father, best of the demons, all living beings in this world, dehinam, sada samudvigna diyam asadgrahat. Their diya, their consciousness, is always disturbed, not peaceful. Why? Because asadgrahat. Because they're holding on for dear life. This grahat means to grab onto of the asat, the temporary. And it's just like we have an apartment or a house. Now, we want to have a house, we want to have some stability in our life. It's the American dream. Right? We want to be able to stay there, raise our children, live there. Right? But suppose you find out that that house, there's so many mountains here, you're building on the side of a mountain, and it's not stable, it's going to fall down. Where is your peace? Can you sleep nice and peacefully in that house? One night? No. No more, right? So the same thing is true for this. Our house is this body. We've placed our faith in this body. We're going to be good in this body, right? We're healthy, and if it's not healthy, we'll make it healthy. But actually, the body is just like this house that's teetering and tottering, just like a drop of water on a lotus leaf in the river. Any moment, it can meet destruction. So our situation here is by nature unsteady, insecure. And therefore, we cannot have peace if we identify ourselves with this temporary material body. This is called asadgrahat. So Prahlad, he instructed his father to give up this materialistic life, go to the forest, Vrindavan forest, and become a devotee of Krishna. This is called speaking truth to power. Here is this little child telling his father, whose arch enemy, he regarded his arch enemy as Vishnu or Krishna, and tell you should surrender to Krishna. So his father was not very happy to hear that instruction. And there was a confrontation, and eventually Hiranyakashipu was killed by Lord Nrisimhadev, protecting Prahlad. But back to our present discussion. So what is it that keeps us in this state of insecurity or anxiety? It is this material desire to try to enjoy the material body and the material world. So Krishna says, first lesson, here's someone whose consciousness is fixed in yoga. Pratihati yada kaman sarvan parta manogatan. These desires arise from the mind when they are infected by the modes of nature, especially the mode of passion. So everyone in this world is infected by these modes, and all kinds of desires are coming up according to what we see, hear, smell, taste, and touch, things coming in, and previous lives even, and previous desires. What is advertising? Advertising is an agency of Maya, you know, Madison Avenue. They're Maya's handmaiden, so to speak, to make you desire things that you don't even need. Right? You have a perfectly nice car, perfectly nice iPod, or whatever it is. And then they want to say, no, your car is outmoded now, you know, and you need a new car. And the iPod, that's yesterday's iPod. Says, yeah, right, I got yesterday's. I'm not satisfied anymore. To sow dissatisfaction. So this is the nature of the material world, is that all these desires keep bubbling up, and we keep trying to satisfy them, and we never become satisfied. There's always more to desire, more to desire, more to desire. So Krishna says, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partaman, one who gives up all these desires that arise from the mind, and atmanivatmana tushta, being satisfied in the self, such a person is tasya pragya pratishtha, is fixed in consciousness. So he goes on like that. He says, one who is not disturbed when there are reasons for disturbance, does not run after the things of pleasure, is fixed. Be like a tortoise, withdraw the senses, except when they're being used to link us to the Supreme, the Spirit, you see? So this is the first lesson here, how to become fixed in consciousness. Now, how does that relate to peace? Well, he goes through this whole explanation, and he says, ultimately, that if you want to get the mercy of the Lord, if you want to get the grace of God, just like here we come, why do we come here? Because there's a certain grace, there's a certain presence, spiritual presence. It's Krishna's presence that's here. And this is called prasad. Prasadam, we know, is nice food that we eat that's been offered to Krishna, spiritualized. But everything is prasad. This is all prasad. The holy name is also prasad. So if we want to get the mercy of the Lord in this way, then we need to follow the principles that Krishna has enunciated in the Bhagavad Gita. So he says, Raga Dveshiva Muktais Tu, Vishayan Indriyais Charan, Atmavashe Vidhe Atma, Prasadam Adigachati. So he says, Raga Dveshiva Muktais. So it's Raga and Dvesha. There's a flip side to desire, and that's repulsion. You know, there's the positive, and this is called the world of duality. So there's Raga, there's attachment, and dvesha, repulsion. Both of them have to be conquered. We have to be equipoised in happiness and distress. So raga dvesha vimuktais, liberated from this, vishayan indriyais charan, even as we're in contact with the objects of the senses. There's so many temptations, positive and negative. How to remain equipoised? He explains, atmavashe vidheyatma. Controlling the self by practicing the regulative principles of freedom. This famous phrase of Prabhupada's in this chapter. What are those regulative principles of freedom? These are the principles of bhakti yoga, given by Krishna. They involve certain things that we do with certain things we don't do. If you want to follow any discipline, you want to achieve a goal in life. Suppose you want to become, it's like we have, Gunga has a nice roommate, you probably know him, John Jock, who's learning to play the tabla, right? So he can't just buy the tabla and then just see how he can do it, bang it like a bongo drum and say, oh, now I'm playing the tabla. He wants to do it seriously so he can really play nicely. Goes to a teacher, there's certain exercises I heard him playing, you know, they're pretty tedious. He can go for, you know, an hour that way, just playing, getting it right. So he has to do that. If he doesn't do that, he's not going to get the goal. And there's other things that he can't do. You know, he can't get into fist fights and hurt his hands. You know, you have to, you know what I mean? There's do's and there's don'ts. So this is what it means. And if you want to achieve this principle of peace and happiness, satisfaction, and ultimately liberation from matter and the end of all misery and immersion in the ultimate bliss of Krishna consciousness, then there are steps to be taken from A to Z. So that's what it means, vidheyatma. The regular principles of freedom. Now let's go through what some of those are. The first principle is very simple. Chant the holy name of Krishna. It's a positive, it's a thing to do. When Prabhupada came to America, he didn't tell his followers to do anything. They were walking in off the street in the Lower East Side. Some of them were, you know, refugees from LSD and, you know, too much drugs. And they just came in there. They were searching for something. All kinds of people came. Chant. He would chant for hours. You know, get them into the chanting. This is the first positive thing. Now, on the negative side, give up those gross aspects of sense gratification that drag us down the most. You know, meat eating. It's not necessary. I've been a vegetarian for 35 years. Maybe Gangaya, many of us have. Health, no problem, you know? And the positive side is just you feel much better. Anyone who's just a vegetarian doesn't do anything knows that, you see? It's absolutely unnecessary to eat meat. And the negative side is huge. Personally, financially, on the health side, the ethical side, the ecological side, it's all down. It's all a downside. It's all negative. There's no reason at all. So meat eating, gambling is also very agitating. Talk about anxiety. You know, gambling is so prominent in America today, of all kinds. That's unnecessary. Illicit sex. This also keeps us bound very tightly. There are certain rules for that within Krishna consciousness. It can be regulated. But if you just let that go, then that completely takes the mind away from anything spiritual. And finally, intoxication. We're already intoxicated by the illusion of this material world, and you make it more so is very damaging to one's spiritual life. So these are the four don'ts, and there's so many do's. This is called vidhyatma, the regulative principles of freedom for the soul. And then what's the result? What's the upside? Prasadam anigacchati. You get the prasadam of the Lord. Then what's the result? Prasade savadukkanam hanirasyopajayate pasanna chetasuryashu buddhi bhaya vatishtate. So he says, savadukkanam hanir, that all of your miseries are destroyed. Why? Because if you're on the transcendental platform of spiritual understanding, then you can tolerate the inevitable things that happen to the body without letting you, without losing your equipoise. You understand that this is just the way it's going to be. You have to, you know, it doesn't cause you great anxiety and trouble in your mind. This is how to be peaceful. Hanarasu prasanna chetasu. You become naturally joyful at heart. Naturally joyful. You don't need something external. Krishna is within your heart. We have a reservoir of pleasure, infinite reservoir of pleasure within our heart. We just need to be able to access it, to contact it. And that's the process of Krishna consciousness. So he says, and the consciousness becomes fixed. Then the next verse, we come back to our theme of peace. He says, on the other side, nasti buddhiryuktasya nachayuktasta bhavana nachabhave dikshanta ashantasya kutaksukam. So he says, without being linked with Krishna and Krishna consciousness, which gives us the opportunity to follow these vidyatma, the negative and positive regulations, there's no question of a fixed intelligence. Nasti buddhiryuktasna. Nukchayuktasta bhavana. And without being linked, there's no question of absorption in the Supreme, Nabhavana. And without that absorption, and without that Krishna consciousness, there's no possibility of peace. Because only by being Krishna conscious can the mind finally be satisfied and not keep looking, you know, forever for that sense of satisfaction that's never there in the material world. So peace lies in being Krishna conscious. Because in any circumstance, you see that the problem with sense gratification is that it comes and it goes. Is that it's fleeting. And so the mind anticipates, and then it actually experiences, and then it remembers, and then it tries to achieve it again. But eventually the senses become unable to enjoy that same happiness. And so there's just frustration. And the inevitable result of all these unfulfilled desires is another material body. You see, this is how reincarnation works. So to be peaceful, we need to come to that point of always being linked up with that perfect source of happiness, Krishna. So whether we're old or young, man or woman, rich or poor, no matter what, even healthy or ill, we can be in Krishna consciousness and have that inner satisfaction, peacefulness, and joy. This is actually... can be achieved in this lifetime. And so Krishna goes on to describe, and there's this famous verse about who is peaceful. Apuyamana matala pratishtam. We're kind of limited in time, so I'll just give the translation. That he compares the peaceful person to an ocean. I live on the Pacific Ocean. You know, perfect name. Right? Pacific means peaceful. So the person who first saw it, he saw it was calm. He called it Pacific. But Krishna also compares the heart of a realized soul to like an ocean that is not agitated, not disturbed by all of the rivers coming into it. And so many rivers enter the ocean, but the ocean just stays where it is, right? So similarly, all these stimuli for sense gratification or for things that would be repulsed by come into the soul's mind, but they don't agitate. He's not moved at all by that. So this is the nature of the peaceful soul, because he's satisfied within. So if we really want to be peaceful in ourself, and this is the root of peace at large also. Why are there so many struggles and so much dissension and war in the world? It starts in the heart of each individual person. They're angry, they're resentful, they're holding a grudge against another group of people. Right? Or it starts like one family against another family, right? Or then they join together, okay, you know, and we'll have a certain tribe against another tribe. And they join into nations, and a nation against another nation. And it's all because no one's satisfied, right? They hold a grudge from 100, 200 years ago, you know. Even though they themselves, you know, were in a whole different circumstance. That they come into a certain body, it's a certain part of a certain family, part of a certain nation. They identify with it all. Now I have an enemy, you know, that I have to fight against. It goes on generation after generation. The only hope for universal peace and universal brotherhood, if you will, is when we all recognize the same Father, and that we all see and we all join together in working for the satisfaction of that, of the whole. And lo and behold, then we all become satisfied. There's a famous analogy given that just as watering the root of the tree will feed all of the fruits and flowers and twigs and leaves and everything, or putting food into the stomach and the whole body becomes nourished. Similarly, serving Krishna pleases everyone. All the demigods, all the people in the world, everyone becomes satisfied when we all work together. It's just like a concert. When there's a nice concert, everyone's playing in tune and in time, then there's a very pleasing feeling. So we can experience that in our own lives, in our own family, in a little community, how if we work together with devotion to glorify the Lord and serve Him, then we become joyful and happy because this is our natural position. So that, it's not time to go into how to organize society. I can't explain that now, based on Varnashram, Daivi Varnashram. But basically, when God is in the center, there can really be peace in a small grouping of a family, or in a large grouping of a nation, or even the world. Otherwise, there will always be dissension. So if we want to have peace in our own lives, and this is we have at least that under our control. We can't control the U.S. government and what they're going to do. We know that they're absorbed in what they're going to do. But at least individually, we can be forces for peace. We can experience it in our lives. Even though the whole world is so disturbed, we don't have to be disturbed. If we find that shore, you know, the lotus feet of Krishna. One more verse and then maybe they can open a little discussion. What time is it? Is it 25 after now? Okay. So it says, Samashita ye padapallava plavam mahatpadam punna yasho marari bhavam buddhya vatsapadam padam 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 yadvipadamatesha. This verse is spoken by Shukadeva Goswami describing to Maharaj Pariksit the nature of the souls who have crossed over this ocean of birth and death. So he says, those who take complete shelter of the lotus feet of Murari is the enemy of the Mura demons, Krishna, which are the place where all the Mahatmas stay, for them it's just like this whole ocean of birth and death. There's a lot of trouble there in the ocean of birth and death. It shrinks down to the little puddle in the hoofprint of a calf. Not even a cow, it's a calf, a little small. And you can easily walk over it. Not for them is this place where there is danger at every step. They have already gone to the spiritual world. So we want to do that. We want to take full shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, meaning taking shelter of his instructions in Bhagavad Gita and of those who are following and who realize such as Srila Prabhupada. And then we can also be undisturbed, no vipadaram, no danger, no sense of security, because we're in the hands of the Lord. That's really the only place of security. So I'll leave it at that. If there's any discussion, thank you very much for your attention. Time is limited. If not, then we can I give you a couple of poems and then we can go to the RT.
Can you answer a question?
Yes, sure.
Since we live in this material world and we are assigned duties.
Yes.
And also this world is 1/4 manifestation of Krishna.
Uh-huh.
As long as we perform the duties and mustering as much detachment as we can,
mm-hmm.
Can we be liberated in one lifespan?
Yes, but the real question is, when you talk of duty, then that means there's a higher authority that's giving you the duty. You sense a higher authority. One has to know exactly what one's duties really are according to the instructions of the Shastra, revealed scripture like Bhagavad Gita as it is, and also advanced souls like sadhus who can also tell us how personally to apply those instructions in our own life. So if we do that, certainly there's a program. In other words, household life is grihastha ashram, it's an ashram, you know, it's there. And if one follows the proper rules in grihastha ashram, one can certainly be liberated in this life. And not only that, but one's offspring and one's dependents, those who one has influence over, can also move nicely toward liberation. So it's just a question of being determined to do the right thing. It's difficult because there are so many extraneous influences that are telling us to do the wrong thing or confusing us. So it takes great determination in any ashram to follow the proper goals, because there's always, you know, it's difficult. It's an austerity. It means giving up things that we really like to do and taking on some things that we may not like to do. But Krishna will help. This is the lesson. He will help us if we address him with deep feeling in the proper way and we chant the holy name nicely. Hare Krishna. So, is it time? Or should I end with one poem? Something sweet. It said that we should always end with something sweet. Yes, go ahead, Dasha. Prabhu? Well, we had one question. Yes, Prabhu.
Do you think it's possible to be liberated outside, living outside of the ashram, or do you really need to kind of life?
It's possible, but it's more difficult. You have to be very determined. See, everything depends. I'll leave you with this. Everything depends on association. This word sangha. By sangha, we can degrade ourselves down to the lowest level. And by the good sangha, you know, sadhu sangha, we can be benefited and get spiritual strength to progress in devotional service. So we have to choose our sangha. And it's not only just, you know, it's perfect, you know, to come together like this. But sangha also means reading Prabhupada's books. It also means, you know, getting on the internet and which site you're going to go to get, you know, the new Dwarka RT, or you're going to get something else. Sangha means what those influences are that you are determined to have. So if you're determined, you can do it, but it's more difficult. So it's possible. We can discuss it. I think it's time. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.